You're listening to Art in Your Ear on community-supported radio, WMNF. This is Dewey filling in for Joe Ellen this week, and as usual, I've been out exploring the edges of the art world with my microphone. Today we ask a copywriter, a freelance designer, and a tattoo artist how art and business come together. Stay tuned. We're in an undisclosed location with Rusty Smart. He's a senior copywriter for a top 10 e-commerce website. He works for a very large local company here in Tampa Bay, and I'm certain you've either seen them on TV or been to their website. Welcome, Rusty.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the work that you do every day.
Every single day of my life for work, I am in the business of leading a team of writers, copywriters, whose job it is to craft messages which are compelling and interesting and ultimately, at the end of the day, generate income.
So is most of the work descriptions of things or creating images in people's minds? You know, which way do you approach it?
Well, that's a great question. In theory, what we do is to collaborate with art directors or designers who are working to evoke emotional responses. Added to that, on my end or our end, the word part is we have to provide factual data as well. So the balancing act or walking the line is how may I engage you with my wordplay and use of language, complementing or coming off of or responding to a visual image while providing you information that ultimately is going to take you somewhere else. And by that, I mean I mean that literally take you somewhere on a website, right? Because there is a drive to action, and to take you somewhere else, which is that happy place where you're going to be transactional with me and my business.
Well, Rusty, a lot of people would suggest that art in the workplace isn't really true creative art.
Ah.
And so I'm curious, you know, how does your creativity express itself, or do you feel that it actually does, or is there just a compromise going on?
That's a great way of putting it, and it's a great question. I've heard people that I've worked with before dealing with visual artists say things to the effect of, you know what, guys, we're here to do a job. If you want to paint pretty pictures, go home and do that part. So I think in the business world, there can be an attitude of, even though, you know, we're utilizing people's creativity and even, you know, my class, quote unquote, of worker bees in my community, we're called the creatives, right? We're the ones who get to dress weird and be a little sillier than the corporate types. That's allowed because we are creatives, right, as a noun. But what I find is that it is just as challenging and engaging on my part to be aware of the things that I love about writing, which is rhythm and sounds and the music and inherent in certain words and in the multiple levels of meaning. Those things, yes, I take into consideration writing copy. You know, it's this is the out myself as a tail end baby boomer here. You know, Darren Stevens ad agency kind of guy. That my view of growing up was there are people in the world whose job it is to be creative in a business environment. Now, that didn't drive every career choice I've ever made, certainly, and it doesn't drive my needs to be creative and to express myself creatively. Am I a fine artist? Am I a writer the way I would be considered a writer working for the New Yorker? No, of course not. Absolutely not. Is it art? Is it creative? Is it the same process that I go through to deliver that as when I am writing poetry or composing music or painting or whatever else I do? Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, writing for a magazine because, you know, at what point does it, you know, you're writing to sell products.
Yes. And that
the New Yorker people are writing to sell a product, their magazine. They're looking for readers or
well
eyeballs.
Said. Well,
I mean,
okay,
it's not
sure,
just for the joy
sure,
of it.
Sure.
You know, at what point does it become, you know, an art and no longer just a business? I mean, that's such a, you know, an interesting line to dance.
Well, and here's the thing. Here's the thing. As long as we're dancing, you know, in thinking about talking to you on this topic, right, it forces me to go, wow, how do I see myself as an artist? And I think that the self-determination or self-definition that you have you have of yourself as an artist is going to drive that question and provide the answer of, you know, is what I'm doing, is this a compromise? Am I selling out? Do I like having insurance? Yeah, I do. If I were not engaged in writing for this really huge, huge, huge company, this huge, and I won't say it again, it's a pretty big place, publicly traded, very successful company, right? If I were not doing that 5 or 6 days a week, would I be perhaps, you know, a few pounds lighter and not own quite as many shirts as I do and struggling and whatever? You know, here's the thing. I believe as an artist, that's where it all starts. My initial thoughts about myself as an artist were formed as when I was a kid. I didn't know that's what I was doing. I happened to be very drawn into live theater and performance art and those kind of things as a young man. I was really lucky as a child to go see lots of good live theater, right? So that led me to a place where it was perfectly natural that self-expression artistically sort of defined myself, and it crossed a lot of lines.
So let's talk about how that becomes expressed then in, you know, where you work now. Do you,
sure.
Do you have to stay in the box? What's your process? You know, how much can you push the envelope? And let's say you've got let's just take an object out of the blue, a ring or something.
Sure. Great choice there, a ring or something. Yeah, rings. Well,
how do you start and how do you get where you're going?
Am I writing you an ode to rings? Not so much. Do I need to be able to identify interesting things about a ring, some rings, some jewelry, a line of jewelry, a designer's vision for her design of jewelry that I can speak to in a way that's going to engage you quickly? Because this is an e-commerce space we're talking about? Absolutely. Does it give me the same little rush inside as when I have that spark of that moment of inspiration driving somewhere else one day and I get home and I've got to write? No, it is not the same feeling, because this is results-driven, not process-oriented.
And how do you get there once you've been given the item? How do you end up? You have, 2 weeks to come up with some blithe copy? And
we can say that. Sometimes 15 minutes, sometimes 6 weeks, right?
So where does it come from? How do you create it?
Personally, I'm all about being overly stimulated with input. I have music playing constantly that may have nothing to do with anything that's going on. I may have a movie running on my PC at the time. There's no telling. I may be doodling, you know. I guess I'm trying to compare, and I'm editing myself. So you know what, Rusty, stop doing that. We'll let you do the editing. Let me just talk. I'm trying in my mind to compare the process at work and the process at home doing my other work. Mm-hmm. Are they different? Wow. Only in terms of timelines, but I do find that my personality type loves the pressure of the deliverable, needing to get somewhere by a certain time, mm-hmm. which to some may sound very anti-artistic. I don't know. Yeah, I would imagine to some you could argue, well, that's just a load of crap.
Well, ultimately, there has to be a final product unless the process itself is the art.
Which, thank you so much. What a segue. Are you reading my mind already? which in my early life / training / experience as an artist, it was so much about the process. And at one point, I was so conceptual, I could sit in a quiet room producing nothing and be sure that I was on fire artistically. Okay, so I have made a lot of I've had a lot of really interesting twists and turns in my own process. And again, I'm an older person. I'm a more settled person. I am not 19 years old. And unfortunately, I no longer think that I know everything. And I no longer think that I am the arbiter of what is and isn't art. But I do know that it is not a compromise morally to be paid for what I do. However, I also know that no, everything that gets published live or read on air, if it's something, a script I've provided, that is not always how I would have had the final product be.
So there's artistic compromise.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Sure. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, staying in a box, and it's staying in a box that's constantly moving. A box that has more people poking at it with sticks than you can imagine. No, and it's very true. And that
poor box.
Well, the poor box. Screw the box. Me. Poor me. No. Yeah, the box. I feel sad for the box.
Yeah.
Because you've got, again, in a business environment, you've got layers of corporate culture and executive personalities and business decisions and things driving decisions, driving what I'm going to do tomorrow that I have no concept of.
Even driving this the fact that we're being coy about who you actually work for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Of course. And thanks for pointing that out. You know, and please be aware, I really love my job, my work job, the one that pays me regularly. I do. I'm well taken care of. I work with people, a bunch of people I love and admire and respect in a lot of different fields. And it's very collaborative, our business, and very much like the Life Theater in some ways, you know, where things just have to come together to be right. But we are also, you know, it's a publicly traded company, and I'm not the spokesperson for that company. And so even, yeah, it was, you know, you and I had a conversation prior to speaking now. What exactly can you say and what can you not say? Well, I'm here to talk about myself and my process and my views and myself as an artist in the workplace and not so much talk about that workplace. Do you
right.
know?
Sure.
But yes, there are parameters. That's a box in itself.
And do you feel like you suffer from creative fatigue, having to just perform every day? You just like come in and go, oh, I can't.
Absolutely.
This is ugly.
Well, yeah. You know, have you been listening in? Yeah, there are certainly times. However, let's turn that around. If I were in my little art studio space and religiously painting, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day for 5 to 6 days, I might be equally creatively exhausted at the end of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I believe that the artistic impulse may be infinite, but that I as a person am not, right? I hit limits. And as long as I'm actively engaged in the workplace and taking my work seriously, yeah, I think it's absolutely possible that that may mean that on a Saturday afternoon, I perhaps am less likely to be creating some of my, you know, quote, my own artwork, unquote. No doubt. But I think that's a human thing. I don't think that's the big bad corporate wolf like eating my soul. I think that it's just speaks to limits, normal human limits.
Sure. Sure. Rusty Smart, really appreciate you coming in and talking to us today about working creatively. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Yeah.
talking to Roman Black, marketing associate at American Stage, about doing art in the workplace. Hi, Roman.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. So tell me a little bit about what you do at American Stage. You've been hired specifically to be a graphic designer, but you're not really out there on the stage and working with the product. You're actually working in the marketing.
Correct. Yeah, mostly my job is to do the marketing, assisting, and creating the artwork for American Stage Theater Company. That entails new season artwork, any ads that go with that, social networking, imagery, things of that. Any way to visually push American Stage Theater Company and define that in different branding ways.
So your work is mostly creating advertisements or marketing materials? Do you actually come up with the creative designs that go into things? Or what's your final product and the process you get there with?
Okay, good question. So I started back in August. Up until the new season, which has just been rolled out, has pretty much been using the existing artwork that another designer created. I'd say probably about 60% of my work is advertisement related. So as far as that goes, the creativity aspect of that is pretty low. But with the new season artwork, though, that I've just done, I've actually been in charge of creating that whole year. So all that's going to be new artwork, and that's where the creativity kicked in. I think the most creative, though, has been with the after hours and the cabaret events, because I have full range with that. So as far as being creative, that's where I get to do pretty much my own thing.
Are you allowed to express yourself, or you have to work within a particular, you know, like with any job, you're not really free to do whatever you want? There's got to be some level of restriction based on your environment.
Correct. With the cabaret and the after-hour events, I'd say there's a lot of creativity and allowance where I can pretty much do as I want to do. But when I say that, what I mean by that, though, I do have to take in consideration who the performer is and what their performance is about. So I will collaborate with them, see if there's any specific imagery that they want me to use, or if they just say go at it. And that's when I have the creative brain to pretty much create what I want. Now, as far as the seasonal artwork goes, that was a little bit more controlled. You know, there's the marketing director, and then there's the artistic director that I had to work with. And they had pretty much a guidelines of what they were looking for. I just had to bring that out visually and satisfy what they're looking for. So
it's sort of art by committee, really.
Correct. Well, luckily the committee is not that big, though.
Well, I mean, when you also do some of your own, we'll call it, you know, more creative artwork outside of the shop.
Correct.
And how are those two processes different for you?
Two processes are different. Whereas my art, my personal art, it's 100% what I want. I don't take in consideration anyone else but what I want to portray in that art piece, with no consideration how successful it's going to be, how it's going to be receptive by others. It's just pretty much me doing my own thing. On the business aspect of it, there's a lot of criteria that I have to, you know, satisfy. So it's pretty much making, you know, the end user happy. So I do have to take that in consideration.
And what about the media choices?
Media choices, my personal work, it's acrylic. It's pretty much free of computer for the most part. Whereas in the business world, it's pretty much nowadays, it's almost 100% digital.
And does the fact that you're doing that in that digital realm change what it is that you produce? You know, for example, if you're using acrylics, you have much more perhaps flexibility in the colors or the actual expression?
Colors, I'd say no. Colors, both through painting and through digital. Color, you can pretty much attain it either way. Texturally, though, that's a little bit more challenging. When you're working with textures, I think you can get a more organic feel with art, with painting and acrylics, than you can with actual digital. It's changed a lot where texture is coming into the digital age, but it still lacks a little bit of what you can do by hand.
And you probably could not do the work you do for American Stage in acrylics.
No, but that would be nice, though. No, I mean, seriously, I think about that, though, daily. Because I think that there's going to come to a point where you're going to have to go back to certain things that you have to do with your hands, like, you know, screen printing, you know, things like that. If you had the time, I think it would be amazing. And I think it would take the pieces to a different level. So, but with that being said, when you have an after hour event or a cabaret event, you have like a day to create the artwork. You really don't have the time for that. So, you know, there's a little bit of time factor that you have to consider. So,
do you feel that your creativity is stifled by the environment, by the restrictions of having to create a product that people sell?
No, I think that's the challenge. I mean, to me, I've worked now for 10 years in the design market, and pretty much, I mean, the challenge of it is to be able to satisfy the end user. And that's where your creativity, I think, really comes to work. You know, how creative are you to be able to satisfy both the client and your own personal interests as a designer? So that, to me, is the most challenging aspect of it.
So, but is that still art?
Yeah. It's art if you know how to make it art. And there's, I mean, that's I think, that's the hard part. And that's the part that you have to cultivate. And it doesn't happen overnight. I think, you know, some people, I think maybe they're naturally, it's in them. But other people, I think it's something that just develops. Like with any career that you're going to be in, it's just something that's a process that grows. So you'll learn as you, you know, age as a designer, you know, when and when you can't use different, you know, art mediums and things of that nature.
And do you think that the work that you do energizes you creatively, or do you get home from working 8 hours a day pushing pixels and go, oh, I can't look at this paintbrush? I mean, how does the fact that you work creatively to make a living affect
it does
your more pure art? And is there a difference?
It does affect it because I do both the 40 hours a week, plus I also do freelancing on the side. So I'm doing a lot of design work behind the computer, probably like 65 hours a week, 70, easy. And that's weekly. So it's hard to find the creative time after all that, because after that happens, I just pretty much want to be away from a computer. And I'm working on the studio space. The studio space is coming, so the interest is still there. It's just that's where time management comes in, and allowing that time for that. So.
And do you see yourself at a point doing a different sort of work, or do you see, you know, this the kind of job you have now making it possible to do creative stuff, or do you see the more traditional artwork taking over as a goal?
Oh no, I don't think so. I don't ever see that happening. I've always, for me personally, my personal art has always been personal. I've never wanted to treat that as a business. So I'm completely content with that being on the sideline.
Do you get something different out of it because of that? I mean, if you're feeling the pressure to, I mean, that's another thing is, you know, where does the art, you know, the poet writes alone, it's art. The poet is published and now he's paid. Is it still art? You know, at what point does the pendulum swing and does it just become?
Well, that's a good question. I think it depends on the person who's doing the creating. Some people, I think, know the balance and work well treating art as a business. And then I think some people are more comfortable with it being strictly something that's more of a, I don't want to say hobby, but something that's more for their own entertainment.
Excellent. You tell us a little bit about the projects that you're doing right now. You've got some, the whole season coming up. You suddenly have to come up with posters for
doing all the season.
12 shows? 6 shows?
Seven. Which includes the American Stage in the Park. So I've created all the artwork for that, working on the new seasonal brochure, working on a lot of stuff right now for gala and our park event, and just pretty much in the after-hours events, cabaret. It's pretty much nonstop. So it's really something.
And how do you come up with that many different ideas all at once? You've got this limited amount of time, and each show has to have its own feeling, its own...
You work quickly. And that's, I think that's the biggest, I think that's the hardest thing in today's time right now, is that everyone's on such a time limit that's where I think sometimes that the quality of art might lack or might be compromised, which is sort of sad.
So rather than being improved by a deadline, it doesn't have enough time to mature or develop?
Yeah, I totally believe that. I think I always tell my clients that when I do something, you know, this is a rough draft. This is a beginning. This is something that develops. And it's dependent upon how some timelines are realistic. Some I think are completely unrealistic. And if you cut it at a certain time, then that's where that process has stopped. Doesn't mean that it's completely developed. So I do think, you know, sometimes you do need to have more time to create certain pieces to be able to take it to that level where it needs to be.
We're speaking with Roman Black, and he's a graphic designer here in the Tampa Bay area. And in addition to American Stage, you have a website of your own.
Yeah, two other. I have formfitdesign.com, which is my freelance design site, and then I have the romangallery.com, which features all my personal artwork.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
He's got no pencil on him. Yeah, he's got some pencil. He's got.
We're now at Foolish Pride Tattoos in downtown St. Petersburg on Central with J. Michael Taylor. He's a tattoo artist here at Foolish Pride. Hey, Jay.
How you doing today?
Hey, we're talking today about art in the workplace, and you're called a tattoo artist. Can you tell me why they call you that?
Well, because I'm an artist at tattoos. You know, my job specifically, I do all custom design work for people, so I have to draw custom designs for each client that comes in. So I do a lot of art every day. Between the drawing time, sitting down with the clientele, doing the consultations, getting someone's ideas out of their head and actually putting it down to paper, I'd say I probably spend the first 4 hours every morning at least drawing line drawings to do the tattoos. Then I usually tattoo for 8 hours a day, which is still an art form in itself, you know, actually applying the ink and the skin. With color blends and everything, because there's no eraser. You can't go back. You have to know what you're doing sort of ahead of time. So it is a long process of planning, and the thought process to make it come to reality is just there's a lot of art involved.
So what brought me to you in particular was I know that you did a project where you took a painting of a koi, a fish, and reproduced this fish on a person. So I'm curious what the process was for that, what the steps were you took, and what the materials were that you used, how you made those decisions.
That project was a koi fish that was done in watercolor to begin with. I can't remember her name. An artist did the actual watercolor painting. What I actually do to recreate something like that is, it's hard to explain, but it's actually just light painting, but I'm just doing it in the skin. I took the initial drawing and did a tracing of it, which would then we apply a stencil, which is like it's like an outline or a coloring book that you place on the skin at first so that you have the design in place. The stencil wipes off so that it doesn't stay there, but it's there momentarily so we know where to start and stop our lining and our coloring. From there, we just put the stencil on. And just like when you really paint and you're sort of loose with it, the style like that, it's almost the same thing. Except I'm just using a tattoo machine with needles instead of using a paintbrush. But it's pretty much almost the same process. It's just a different application of how to do it. But I pretty much just go through and right there needs to be orange, right here needs to be red. And it's a lot like painting, especially that project. With tattooing, we do either a line work on the outside, which is more traditional tattooing, but then they have some artists who do more of like what we consider portrait style, which is actually more photorealistic tattooing, painting more, or tattooing more like painting instead of tattooing like old school tattoos.
And what are the differences in like choices you have to make in terms of color or design? Based on the fact that you're using human skin and the resources that you can use?
Well, usually what I normally do is I definitely take into account the person's actual skin tone. The darker you are, different colors. You know, the lighter you are, we can use more colors. I always try to play their skin tone as a mid-value sort of within a piece. So then I bounce lighter and darker off that. Unless they're real light, then I usually start with a mid-tone, then add darks, then lights at the end. With tattooing, you have to tattoo a certain way, because if you use dark colors next to light colors, there's a chance you could actually stain it. So how we always work is from darkest color to lightest color so that there isn't any staining or tainting of the actual ink in the skin. You know, the difference between doing it that way and then lighter to darker is, you know, usually you want a lot of dark contrast in it, so it's always good to get that in first so that it's eye-catching, it pops off the skin a little bit more.
Are you limited in your designs and in your creativity by the people who come to you? Or do they say, hey, do something cool?
You know, I'm fortunate enough to have enough clientele that's, they usually come to me and say, hey, I have this general idea. help me push it further. That's what I always try to tell people when they come in here. People will bring me photographs of other tattoos or photographs of images they found online that they're like, I want a tattoo like this. Well, okay, cool. Here's our general idea, but here's 10 things we can do to make it even cooler. And, you know, I try to always push my clientele into, like, branching off and doing bigger. Yeah, you want a quarter sleeve. Well, you don't get a quarter sleeve from me. You get a half sleeve or a full sleeve. It's got to be big and bold and eye-catching, you know. I try to always incorporate what my clientele likes and what they're looking for, you know. It's always about making my clientele happy, but I always try to push it a little bit ahead so that they come out even more with a wow at the end. Like, I didn't know it was going to be this cool, and thank you so much. You know, it's very fulfilling when your client gets up, takes a look at the piece of artwork you just did on them, and they're just like, oh, my God, that's awesome. Thank you.
So what's the trail that brings one into being a tattoo artist? Do you start off with, like, watercolors and finger paint, or how do you get into this?
Tattoo artist has their own story. Myself, I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree from the Columbus College of Art and Design. I did graphic design and web development professionally for 6 years before I even picked up a tattoo machine. I've always been into tattoos. I never thought I would tattoo. You know, I didn't go to school to do that, but you know how life goes. Sometimes you're going down one path, and the next thing you know, you're off on another. And I sort of just fell into it through friends. And, you know, as soon as I started getting actually into it, I got myself an apprenticeship and just went from there. It took me about 6 months to actually learn how to do everything to start tattooing, because I already had the art background. It was pretty much just the bloodborne pathogens and keeping the shop clean and business aspects and things like that I had to learn. But I fell in love with the art, and I know that I'll probably be tattooing for the rest of my life.
So let me ask specifically about the Koi project that you did, where you copied the one to the other. When you made that copy, what did you have to take into consideration when you did the transfer? What could you do and what couldn't you do?
Well, there's really nothing I can't do. I mean, if you can think of it, or we can get it down in some sort of physical art, I can do it in the skin. And that just takes experience and practice with tattooing to be able to do stuff like that. Really what I had to take more in consideration than anything was just more of what I needed to get done on that first session and how much my client could take pain-wise. That was on his chest. He had a few tattoos before that, nothing at that scale though. So I knew that I was going to have to knock in my darks and build it to a certain extent that after the stencil's gone and my client is, you know, went through all their pain, you know, that they could possibly go through, I need to make sure that I had enough there that when I go back the next time, everything's sort of mapped out in place where then I just have to go back and keep painting on it. So really with that first session we did, he sat so good that pretty much I got almost all of it knocked out. And a good way, you know, the reason why I did is because I did it in sections so that after I move out of, let's say, the fin, I don't have to go back into that. I tattoo it to the point where it's almost done, and then I'm out of that area, so then it helps with just pain and for your client sitting.
Well, that's something most media does not wince when you put the pigment down.
Yeah, most people don't have to worry. My art depends a lot on my clientele. Are you going to sit well? Are you going to be able to sit for the extended amount of period that I need you to sit for? Are we going to have to take 100 breaks? You know, some people forget exactly what it takes to get a tattoo is, you know, you need to be well-rested and you need to be focused at it. It's a good time, but, you know, it's also, I tell my clientele, you need to take that into consideration and take it seriously. You need to eat before you come, get a night's or good night's rest beforehand, don't go drinking the night before. You know, all those factors help into really making a good tattoo happen for somebody.
Now, you said that you had a more traditional art sort of career before you came into this. What was the biggest surprise about working with human beings as your media?
the biggest surprise is what people would allow to be put on their body. Some people want some very odd things. I myself don't tattoo anything that's negative, like anything that's anti-anything. I don't really tattoo. I always steer people away from getting their hands, neck, and knuckles tattooed. If you're in the real world, you're not going to be able to go out and get a job looking the way I do. I know I people are like, you're a hypocrite. You have your hands, neck, and knuckles tattooed. Yes, I do, but I'm also in a position and in a career that is allowing me to do that. You're not going to be able to graduate college and go get yourself a really nice job with a huge heart that says mom in it on the side of your neck. That's probably the biggest surprise of just weird requests and just the weird people you meet in this industry. There's some great people, don't get me wrong, but some people come in and it's just like, wow, really?
What's your favorite, you know, project on a person?
For the last year, I've been working on a sleeve to enter into the Tampa Tattoo Fest, which is actually happening next weekend at the DoubleTree Hotel in Tampa. They have contests every year for best sleeve, back piece, large color, large black and gray. I've been working on a large scale full sleeve of a octopus grabbing an angler fish and a couple other small fish around it that I've been very happy with and very proud. It's definitely going to be a crowning piece in my portfolio.
Cool. And tell us again the location and dates of that event.
It's March 24th through the 27th, and it'll be at the DoubleTree Hotel in Tampa.
Great. Well, Jay, thanks a lot for taking time to talk to us today here at the Tattoo Shop.
Thank you, Dewey. I appreciate it.
In the eye of the beholder. Beauty is within. Sometimes I feel when I kick up my heels in the sun, I'm the loveliest one. I'm the loveliest one. When I look at you, when I look at you, when I look at you,
going around the corner here in St. Petersburg, Florida, where we found the Art Wench, and today she's got a guest with her. Hi, Art Wench.
Hi, Dewey. Good to see you again.
Who is this we have with us?
We have Zachary.
Hi, Zach.
Hi.
Great. Let's get started.
Okay. To start, we have two events at the studio at 620. The first involves spoken word. There will be a release party for Pedro the Poet's hip-hop spoken word CD, The Street Reporter EP, at the studio on Friday, March 18th at 8 p.m. The second Studio at 620 event we want to feature is a joint venture with WMNF's Radio Theater Project. Both invite you to be part of the live audience for Cuban Bread on Monday, March 21st at 7 p.m. Cuban Bread by Dennis Calandra is a play about Ybor City cigar workers, Don Quixote, and labor rights in 1930s Florida. If you want to check out Pedro the Poet or Cuban Bread, Studio at 620 is located at 620 First Avenue South in St. Pete. Call 727-895-6620 for more information. Another theater event we want to mention is Free Fall Theater Company's presentation of Miss Julie by August Strindberg, March 18th through April 3rd. Free Fall is located at 6099 Central Avenue in St. Pete. Call 727-498-5205 for more information. Now, Zach, can you tell us about some events involving visual art?
on Saturday, March 19th. Check out Live Arts on the Sidewalk on the 600 block of Central Avenue in downtown St. Pete. Galleries, fashion, and music will be available from 10 to 6. One place you should make sure to visit is the Birds of a Feather show at Even Odd in the Chrislip Arcade on 645 Central. The show features bird art by local artists. Ask gallery owner Jennifer about the upcoming Stuffed Bunny Show. In Tampa, Thursday through Saturday, artists of all ages and abilities need to visit Chalk Walk in Hyde Park Village. Watch professionals create sidewalk art or join the fun yourself. For more information, go to tbbca.org.
Thank you, Zach. That was great. Now we'll finish up with some special events. Zach, why don't you tell us what's going on at Great X Children's Museum?
On Wednesday, March 23rd, Great X is having a preview party from 6:30 to 8:30 for its new Touch Tunnel. Leave your handprint in a rock. For more information, go to greatx.org.
Okay, and on Saturday, March 19th, and again the following weekend, check out the New Seeds Festival, highlighting women's performing arts. Get inspired, empowered, and educated by women from Sheila Kirsten Hughes and the TSP, the Tampa Bay Ballet, Rebecca Levy Dance, Artist Block, and one of my favorites, the Blue Scarf Collective. For more information, go to newseedsfest.org. Okay, that's it for now, Dewey. Thank you for letting us announce the art events this week. And Zach, let's say hi to Jo Ellen and goodbye to all the fantastic WMNF listener supporters. Hi Jo Ellen. Goodbye, WMNF.
Goodbye, Zach. Goodbye, Art Wench. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been Art in Your Ear on 88.5 WMNF Tampa. Jo Ellen will be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Sex tonight. Tell him don't it to me.